What's up, 3DMJers? I am here with fellow coaches Jeff Alberts and Brad Loomis. How are you guys doing?
Good. Never been better.
Good. So we had a really good question on, I think it was YouTube, about training volume across a training career. And I think there's some common misconceptions about how to manage that, because a common narrative or statement would be, over time, you should be progressing your training volume. And I think that that can be misleading. And I'm sure some of you have heard Jeff talk about, you know, the quality of the training and how over time his volume has actually come down. So which one is it? And there's not a, I think that more than anything, there's just a way to kind of conceptualize what we're actually talking about, and we'll get into that. But I think the spoiler here is that, like, your total volume, whether it be volume load or number of sets, like, it doesn't necessarily have to go up over time in order to continue to create an overload stimulus and, you know, acquire these positive adaptations. So, Jeff, why don't you kind of talk about maybe some of your training history and what you've sort of found from when you started to kind of pulling back now, at this stage in your career?
You just blew my mind. You just said we don't have to progress and all these things to create a stimulus. I don't need to train no more. That's it. I'm just going to think about training and that's it. I'm going to start growing. No, but if I take you all the way back, what's interesting in high school, because I started lifting actually in the middle of eighth grade. And it was like in my room with the plastic weights and all that. And I started to see, you know, some muscles popping up. But then once I got into high school, I was like using the universal machine. And I remember telling myself, I'm not going to go to the free weight bench press until I could stack the universal machine. It was like, I think it was like 250 or whatever it was on
there. Oh my
gosh,
Jeff, that's exactly me. That is exactly me when I very first started, only I was in my 20s.
So I finally graduated off that thing. So I didn't start like benching, I think, until my sophomore year, like free weights. And literally at the end of my sophomore year, I was benching, I think it was 290. And I weighed about 165. And then my junior year, I actually benched 315 maybe. And then my senior year, I was benching 330. And I was 165. I've never touched that ever again, like not even come close to that. And then, you know, you go into my early 40s, and that's probably where I was at my biggest. But yet, in high school, a couple of those lifts were, like my overhead pressing, my benching was probably superior than I was in my 40s. So it's kind of interesting that the strength really, like the like, okay, adding strength over time, you get bigger and bigger and bigger. It's like, I don't know. I don't know about that.
Yeah, I think with the strength thing, it's especially confusing because, you know, there's neurological elements there that can make things a little bit harder to decipher. I mean, I think with a wide lens view on this process, that should be happening on average. But I think there's also something to consider regarding, you know, looking at things all else equal. So, you know, your bench press as a junior in high school was probably a train wreck visually compared to what it is now. And so the stimulus that you're achieving now may actually be greater. You know, the tension that the muscle is experiencing could be greater. And I think, you know, it could be helpful to kind of go into, you know, some of the maybe basic physiological concepts that we're trying to kind of accomplish here, you know, when we go into the gym, because I think that helps some of these other pieces fall into place. But before we do that, Brad, did you have anything to add?
I kind of think about Jeff bench pressing 330 for one rep and the quality and also like the total volume of that versus, you know, kind of like what he does now. And think in terms of the quantifiable numbers guy in me, 330 for one rep is vastly different than set after set after set of what he does now, you know? And then, of course, like you said, you know, the quality of that one rep then versus all of his reps and sets right now. And it just, it speaks volumes on, you know, that form of progressive overload.
But getting to 330, so give you more context on it. So it would be like, okay, I'm warming up with 135 for 10, 185 for 10, 225 for 10, 250 for 5, 275 for 1, do a single with 300. I would do that like Mondays and Wednesdays. Then on Friday, it would be a kind of the same thing. I think, hey, let's see how much we can do. Like, you know, back in high school, it's every Friday. Let's see how much we can do for a PR. So it was literally, I was benching like three times per week. My sophomore, junior, and senior years. And you've seen my physique, you know, at 17. Like, I was pretty stout. So it's probably a combination of, like, a decent amount of volume there and frequency. And the form wasn't, like, super horrendous. Like, obviously, right. It's cleaner, much cleaner now. But it wasn't like it was totally horrendous. But it's just interesting how, like, from a size perspective, I could kind of just see how, even though my strength level didn't increase over time, it was just the fact that every time I'm in the gym, there's enough volume, there's enough of a dose as far as the volume, but also the proximity to failure. Like, my effort level's always been high. So if you were to remove the numbers from it, because our brain only knows numbers, the muscle knows the effort.
Yeah.
So like, the muscle doesn't know if I'm doing 300, 320, 290. It's like, I'm still taking whatever set I'm doing. It's hitting the appropriate stimulus, the appropriate proximity to failure.
Yeah.
And more times than not, like, over the course of my career, I've definitely been on the edge of failure throughout the course of my training history. Like, I can't really recall a time where I was like, I'm leaving like 4 in the tank, 5 in the tank. I've never trained as a power lifter. So I've always like been really close with, as far as like the intensity has always been really high.
Yeah. No, you bring up a great point. You know, I think as coaches and athletes, it's easy to want to look at things from a numerical perspective, and it can help with planning. But like you said, like, the internal stress that your muscle is experiencing isn't like dictated by an Excel formula, you know? So it's going to be dependent on effort. So what I think is helpful here is to sort of conceptualize what some of these training variables that we prescribe in our training are ultimately accomplishing. So when it comes to hypertrophy, like, the primary driver of hypertrophy is going to be mechanical tension. And primarily tension, like, at the fiber level. So, I kind of differentiate there, because I think a lot of people assume heavy weight equals more tension. And on a whole muscle level, it may, you know, or it will. You know, if you do a single with 330 versus a single with 185, you're going to be applying more tension across the muscle. But at the fiber level, we then kind of want to transition and talk about, like, the size principle, which this is probably a review for, you know, a number of people listening to this. But basically, like, motor unit recruitment scales with effort, ultimately. So whether that's, you know, the ability to meet the demands of a load that's on the bar. So a heavier weight, you're going to have greater motor unit recruitment, like recruitment of more muscle fibers, ultimately. And then there's also the scenario of motor unit recruitment in order to maintain adequate force output. So if you do like a set of 10 and you take that to failure, you're not going to, like, you're going to progressively increase recruitment up to a point, and then it might kind of plateau. But when we look at tension, we want to think of it like, okay, are we tapping into the muscle fibers that are, you know, the higher threshold that are going to have the greatest propensity for muscle growth? And training close to failure is going to accomplish that for most people. And, you know, technique refinement is going to help dial that in as well. So if you're just moving the weight from point A to point B, but you're compensating, you know, then it's going to be a little bit harder. You know, when you have lack of stability within a movement, you know, that can limit motor unit recruitment. But ultimately, like, this is oversimplified, but a way to think about hypertrophy is the dosing of tension at the fiber level. And so, you know, if a fiber is going to grow, it needs to be recruited and accumulate enough time in that recruited state with adequate tension. So, you know, with that said, doing more sets is going to address the time component. Load and proximity to failure is going to address the tension component. And so doing more volume can mean a few different things. You know, it can mean doing more sets. It can mean doing more volume load, like sets times reps times weight, which I think it can be a very misleading way to look at volume, especially across a training career, because it doesn't, volume load in and of itself doesn't tell you anything about, you know, the stimulus or the proximity to failure. You can have very high volume loads, but stop, you know, 10 reps shy of failure. Exactly. Yeah. So it doesn't mean much in isolation.
Right.
I don't think it's a useless metric, but I think number of like hard sets is probably kind of the best planning proxy that we have there. And so when we talk about progressing volume over time, it's not as much volume that's progressing. And maybe this is, you know, we collectively need to be careful in how we word this moving forward, because I think it can be difficult to understand that volume in terms of number of sets and, you know, volume load, those don't necessarily have to go up in the long run. Like they might a little bit, they might come down for some people as they refine their technique, but ultimately the stress at the fiber level needs to be increasing over time. And there's a lot of ways you can accomplish that without increasing number of sets, without doing higher volume loads and things like that. So as you adapt and you're able to perform more reps, you're doing that, but your set volume might not change much.
So I think what to expect is, like, and this is true for me, is over your career, you're going to have like peaks and valleys. There's going to be times where like, oh, wow, I'm on a good run here. I'm able to increase loads on most lifts across 2, 3, 6 months, maybe, or even a year. You're just like, it's linear. You're just going. And you'll probably see like your physique respond to that. Like you'll probably see like, oh, I actually put some size on. But then you'll hit a wall or you hit a valley where it's like, okay, I can't progress these lifts anymore. But it doesn't mean you're not getting that stimulus. So like you just said, it's like you're still like, because if let's say a year goes by and now you're up 20 pounds on a certain lift, well, now you're doing that 20 pounds consistently as you move ahead, even though it's not going higher, you're still moving it more than where you were in the past. And if you're still hitting the appropriate proximity to failure, you're going to get a stimulus. Again, your brain, I should say, don't know numbers. Because I've had a lot of valleys, and it's not like I shrink, because I'm still training, I'm still putting the effort in. So that's a thing, like people don't realize that, like you're going to have those moments where you just got to keep training consistently, keep putting the effort in, even though numbers aren't moving, you're still going to get that stimulus. Doesn't mean your physique isn't responding to it.
For sure.
Yeah, that's what's hard for people to wrap their head around, because it's more about numbers. They want to see numbers move over time, but there's other forms of progress. Like maybe my numbers are stagnant, but like you said, Brian, maybe my bench press looks a hell of a lot prettier now than it did back in high school. So maybe, you know, it's cleaner reps. I'm getting more out of each rep that way.
And you picked up, you commented on something there, Jeff, that a lot of people don't even consider, and that is over time, right? Time is more than a month. You know, it's more than a year. It's like you said, Jeff, it's your entire lifting career, you know? Because unlike you, Jeff, I'm a little bit different in that I can vividly remember in 2002 or three, the very, very first time that I squatted 315 pounds. And your peaks and valleys that you talked about, I went through many, 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 many of those. And now, you know, here I am 52 years old, which is what, like 22 years later, I can walk into any gym anywhere and rep 315, you know? And like you said, not only does it look better, its quality is much, much better. It's almost undeniable that I'm getting much more out of that now than when I very, very first started doing it. So that time component, like if I was to draw a bar graph, which I don't even know if people are going to be able to see this, I was actually load-wise stronger a few years ago, and I'm down a little bit now, but that's still a lot higher than where I was 10, 15 years ago. And I don't know where I'm going to go from here. Maybe from here, I kind of go up a little bit, you know? But that time component, people get locked into just like their gym session and this block and this year. But time, you're talking your whole career. And then kind of going into the next subject, Brian, I'm really going to like to hear kind of what you have to say about this. Our lifting is not in a bubble. It's not like that's the only thing our bodies do is lift those loads and those weights in the gym. And this kind of goes back to my recent vlog that I did when I purposely dropped my volume way, 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 way down. When I was out back here splitting tons and tons of wood and walking around with logs, you know, back and forth, up and down the stairs, you have to accommodate for life and what your body is doing outside of that gym, because we don't live inside of a bubble. And there's all those other things that are either going to A, take away from your training performance possibly, but then B, they might actually contribute to your physique and unbeknownst to you, maybe your goals as far as how you want to look.
It could be the fact that, I mean, sometimes you lower training volume down, I'm talking like set volume or frequency or what have you, you get more recovery.
It is.
Now you're able to express your performance a lot better because fatigue isn't getting in the way. That's the way I kind of look
at peaking 101. Yeah.
Training volume over my career, it's like sometimes I have to reset my baseline depending on what's going, like if I'm contest prepping or I'm in a maintenance period, or like you said, Brad, like something in life, like I got something going on and I need more energy elsewhere. Like, I don't look at it as like, oh gosh, there goes all my gains because now all of a sudden I got to drop my volume down. It's like, well, I'm just resetting a baseline.
Yeah.
Because atrophy doesn't have any, I mean, you're more of the science guy, Brian, but 3 to 5 weeks, you would say probably atrophy happens when you stop training altogether. So even if I reduce my volume down by 50%, chances are I'm not going to lose muscle mass. Maybe I get a little detrained. Maybe I can't express strength as much because I'm a little detrained, but actually like tissue loss, like the only time I've seen tissue loss over 38 years when I stopped training for 4 months. Then I was like, oh, okay, now I know what muscle loss actually looks like. And I like stopped paying attention to my diet too. So I was like, okay, this is the worst body comp as an adult I've ever had because I stopped training and I stopped watching what I was eating.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. You know, it's definitely, you would be setting yourself up for failure for sure if, as you get older, you insist on moving the needle, whether that be additional reps, additional load, additional sets, whatever it is, like session to session or week to week. Because, you know, like you've said before, Jeff, like the supply and the demand of what we're talking about is if you have this large stimulus, but you don't have the resources to recover from it. Well, guess what? Like, it not only are you not going to be recovering from it, but some of that fatigue is going to mask your ability to actually provide a subsequent stimulus. So it's that balance of managing fatigue is, you know, especially as you advance in your training career and, you know, you have other priorities come up. But, you know, one thing I think that I wanted to mention, you know, Brad, you had said like over time is that's something that a lot of people, they look at this as, okay, if things are going well, I should be able to increase weight every session. And that's just simply not true, or even reps. It's not true once you get past a point. And for the people that are insistent on that, usually it's at the expense of their technique. And so you'll see a lot of people that are trying to check a box in their logbook, and then their technique is compensating in order to accomplish that. So they're putting the numbers ahead of the stimulus. And I think that's what we really want to avoid, you know, as we get older and more advanced. But, you know, Jeff, you'd kind of talked about, you know, being kind of plateaued at a certain performance. And I do believe over time there should be, you know, again, all else equal, let's say you're doing the same exercise, same weight, same execution. You should, in order to continue to gain muscle, like you should see some form of progression, but the key is over time there. So it might take you 4 months to go from 10 reps to 12 reps, you know, it could. So when we apply that stimulus, it kind of raises our ceiling a little bit. And as those additional reps, those adaptations take place, those additional reps become available. And sometimes there's positive adaptations that are occurring, but numerically it can look like we're plateaued when we just haven't adapted enough to kind of earn that additional rep or earn that next 5 pounds. And so, but over time, like in order to continue to progress, the stimulus should be going up, which again, this is the stipulation here, is all things equal. If you're doing the same exercise, like your performance should slowly be trending up, and it might look plateaued, but if you're developing, then it's probably not truly plateaued. Like I could stay at probably the same rep range on some exercises for a year and just get better at execution and increase the stimulus, you know, within that rep range. And so once you start introducing variables that change, I think it can make things more confusing. But I don't want the message to be that don't worry about progression, because I think progression is important for muscle growth, but it's dictated by the rate that you're adapting and not something that you should necessarily proactively above all chase. You just want to make sure you're doing enough.
So like, let's say for example, like these are some of the exercises that makes us feel like we're not progressing, like laterals, curls, like all these ISO exercises. Like for laterals, for example, I've been in the 20 to 30 pound range for decades. So it's like, and you know, and some of my athletes will ask me like, I can't get any more reps on these, you know, and I can't increase the load, because if I increase the load, then my reps go from like 12 down to 4 or 5. So do I add a set? Do I do supersets? Do I do myo reps? Like, what do I do to in a sense, give them that sense of security, that sense of confidence that they are actually moving the needle forward? So that's always a tricky conversation you're having with someone like on a slow moving exercise like that. And it's easy for me because I've been training for so long and I have so much history and data to look back on myself and go, okay, when I was 22 and I look at those photos, I look at myself at 52, like Brad, I'm like, okay, my delts look way bigger now than they did back then. So it's like, even though I haven't increase my loads consistently over the course of 3 decades, or even my reps, even sets. Like you can only do so many sets too. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, 3 sets, 4, 5, maybe 6. But then after that, it's like, where do you go from there? So it's just repetitive. Yep. Make sure you're getting enough proxy to failure. Just keep nailing it down. But it's an easy for me to grasp that. Harder for someone who's in their first year or two of lifting or 5 years of lifting to like get a sense of confidence with that, because there's a lot of unknown territory there. So how do you guys go about that conversation with an athlete when it comes to like, we know we need to have some type of progressive overload over time, but getting them to understand, like dependent on the exercise and dependent on the context, this is how we have to look at these things.
Hey 3DMJers, we are extremely excited to announce that we just released a new free course in the 3DMJ Vault titled Pro Bodybuilder Case Study. It's probably the closest, most detailed look at a full-blown contest prep cycle that you've ever seen or been able to follow all in one centralized location. One of our four head coaches, Brad Loomis, will guide you through an entire three-year stretch between competitive bodybuilding seasons with one of his longtime athletes and professional bodybuilders, Phil De Guzman. We are so grateful that Phil let us use him as a subject because he and Brad kept phenomenal records, both in their spreadsheets and visually with his progress photos, so that we could track his physique and body weight throughout the whole process. You'll get to follow his career from when he won his first PNBA Pro card in 2020, through his initial recovery phase after that, through his first cut to make weight for a powerlifting meet, through his second and more robust off-season gaining phase, through his initial prep positioning diet and preseason holding pattern, and finally through his final contest prep fat loss phase when he won his second WNBF Pro card just a few months ago in 2023. It's really such a unique perspective on not only what a time investment it takes to see the results of natural bodybuilding efforts, but also to see how we coach on a macro scale. In this case study course, which again is totally free, you'll get a sense of why we tell our future competitors that they can't simply contact us just a few months before they want to get on stage and expect the best results possible. You'll see how Phil and Brad made their long-term timeline and how the big picture considerations allowed for the improvements they were looking for over a few years. This is also one of the big reasons we changed our coaching options and offerings this year at 3D Muscle Journey. We know the value of getting athletes early and how it impacts their results years down the line, so we created some more entry-level onboarding methods to set more people up for success like Phil's in the future. So that kind of leaves me with two pitches here. First off, like I've already said a bunch, go take the Pro Bodybuilding Case Study course for free at 3dmjvault.com. You'll get all the videos and be able to download Brad's presentation with all of Phil's plans and photos and everything you need to kind of see how this whole coaching machine works over time. And secondly, if you've ever thought of working with us for any goals in the future, we think you should reconsider that and possibly get on the squad now to see how you and your coach can make the most impact together for the long haul. We have new onboarding options for non-competitors, some new lower frequency options at new lower price points, and even some training only or nutrition only coaching options for the first time ever. You can always find links for coaching details on our main site at 3dmusclejourney.com. Additionally, we've got those coaching details directly linked throughout Brad and Phil's course as well, in case you get inspired to sign up while watching the videos in real time. So head on over to 3dmjvault.com and check out the Pro Bodybuilder Case Study today. That's 3dmjvault.com to get instant access. Thanks so much for listening and enjoy the rest of the show.
People's attention spans are very, very short. And I basically kind of find ways, thinking of the big picture, right? Thinking of, okay, you're going to be doing some form of a lateral raise in some way, shape, or form for years. You know, maybe if you're in the sport as long as us, like decades, right? And so I will a lot of times periodize things such that the answer to your question, Jeff, about myo reps versus this versus that versus heavier loads for 5 reps versus lighter loads for 15 reps, the answer to that is yes, but in different times and different periods. You know what I mean? And when you zoom out and you look at the it's so good that, Jeff, that you're on this podcast, because you're such a kind of an outlier, but it's this perfect example of, you just like you said, the training and look at the evolution as it happens. Because I kind of think of where you are now with your lateral raises that are between 25 and 30 pounds versus
20,
where I've seen
15
you
sometimes.
Well, yeah, even 15.
Like,
but
I could get more with 15 because my form is a little cleaner.
And that's my point.
I can get
that,
like,
exactly
more
my
like
point.
The eccentric. I can hold the eccentrics a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly my point. Same loads, but boy, they sure look a whole lot different. And yeah, I got a comment recently on one of my YouTube vlogs that says, boy, this is the way Brad does these is so much different than the control and the can't remember the word that he said, but basically he was saying how pretty yours are, you know? And I'm like, well, thinking to myself, that is the development of Jeff harnessing years and years and years. And like you said, Brian, those adaptations that come from doing that exercise. And that's my big picture goal when I periodize things like this for my clients, is to make their lateral raise or their curl or whatever it is that they're doing better 5, 10, 15 years down the road with better quality, better stimulus, et cetera. So in the short term, again, yeah, let's go ahead and use a heavier load and get 6, 7 clean reps, you know? Let's now do that for a block and let's periodize into a lighter load. Same quality, you know, but it's going to improve because they're still doing it, you know? And now we're getting more reps. And then, of course, now we'll periodize into myo reps. And now we'll periodize. And there's not an end-all, be-all. This is the thing that's going to make me grow.
I was just
going
to say, look,
exactly.
Brian. So, okay, I'm going to do 30s for 8. Maybe it's a little bit of leveraging and hitching. Is that better than 15? Super, super strict, slower eccentrics. Like, which one's more optimal?
I mean, I think...
Because that's the questions that we get all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would lean more towards the cleaner execution. I mean, there's going to be like a heavier eccentric element on the 30s, but usually that's where people are cheating anyway. So it's
The gravity is pulling that 30 right on down. Or exactly. Like with a 30, I can fight gravity a little bit better under more control.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think too, I mean, I know I'm asking the questions and I'm answering my own questions, huh? But anyways, but I think too, it's like how your body feels, like aches, pains, injuries, like that's going to dictate how you execute movements as well. Like how, like the loading, rep speed, like all these types of things. So the question I was asked you earlier in the podcast, Brian, was about like when you're talking about mechanical tension.
Mm-hmm.
So rep speed. Like right now, like you kind of see a lot of people like really slowing down. Like they want to feel it. I want to get the tension. They talk about the tension. So their eccentrics are like super slow. The concentrics are even really slow. And the loads are obviously lighter. Is that a negative, do you think, as far as like hypertrophy? Or what do you think is going on with that in comparison, let's say, someone who's a little bit faster paced with their rep cadence?
I mean, when we look at the research on like rep tempo, unless you're at an extreme end of like 10-second eccentric or something like that, it kind of comes out similar outcomes. So it's a great tool if you're trying to work around aches and pains to kind of slow things down a little bit, you know, especially the eccentric. But when we, you know, kind of going back to just the motor unit recruitment and the fiber recruitment principle that's kind of underlying a lot of this, is if you go slow, eventually you're going to reach task failure. You know, like you're still going to get high degrees of motor unit recruitment and high degrees of tension at the fiber level. So I don't think it matters that much if we're doing a set of 30 that's clean versus a set of 15 that's really slow and clean, but I think the set of 15 that's clean is going to probably outperform like the sloppy set of 30. So I think keeping technique at the forefront as you progress is extremely important. And I think another thing that's kind of worth reminding people of is we know that volume and hypertrophy has this like inverted U-like relationship. You know, we ideally to optimize progress kind of at the top of that, you know, bell curve. And then if we do too much, you know, recovery starts to be compromised. We might still see a net positive in terms of gains, but it might not be what is optimal if we were to manage recovery better. But if we think about this inverted U on this X and Y axis, basically anything above the x-axis is going to be like net gains. That's like positive hypertrophy there. And so I think a lot of people assume where they're at in their journey is dictated by what they just did. And they're always sort of assuming they're operating at the minimum effective dose. But let's say you let's say you start, or, okay, let's say you have this inverted U and you're kind of on the right side of it early in your training career. Like you're probably, maybe you're doing too much, or maybe you're doing enough, but you're doing a lot of sets because they aren't precise. But even if you pull back volume, it doesn't mean that you're falling below the minimum effective dose, because you might have been, I mean, you're likely 99% of the time going to be operating above that anyway. So falling back a bit, as you alluded to earlier, Jeff, it still puts us under that curve in most cases, unless you go to an extreme end or stop training. And it takes relatively little volume to maintain muscle mass, really, which is kind of an advantage. And it's a cool aspect that, you know, if you trained a lot growing up, you know, you can maintain it. Like, if you're not trying to necessarily build more muscle, if I wasn't trying to build more muscle at this point, I would probably just train a couple days a week, and I bet I could maintain pretty much everything, you know? So,
like, I know I can do that.
It's just mentally, it would be hard for me just to train 2 days a week.
Exactly. But you're a competitive bodybuilder too.
Yeah. Like, through contest prep, I know, okay, I can bring volume down, and it's going to be a positive, because my recovery is going to be a lot better.
It is.
But yeah, I can see.
Yeah.
It's just challenging. I think it's more mentally challenged for people to bring the volume down.
Yeah, it is, for sure.
Need to, for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, it's the minimum effective, I wouldn't even say minimum effective volume, maybe rephrase it to like minimum effective stimulus. That's going to inch up over time. But you might start here, and across your training career, you might be wavering, and it just might be slowly catching up, and it might never catch where you're at. But it's not predicated on what you did the session before. Like, it's not like if you did two sets this week, that's all of a sudden your minimum effective dose. Now you need to do three. Or if you did 100 pounds, now you need to do 105. Like, you're probably already starting in the middle of that curve. And so you have some wiggle room either way. If you were always operating at the minimum effective dose, hypothetically, if we would even know that, then yeah, you would probably have to be more assertive with your increases over time. But nobody's really doing that. Does that make sense?
That's a question for a lot of people. Is like, they don't really know where it operated.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is it two sets? Is it three? Is it five?
They split hairs and they look for the magic number instead of just going in and doing the work and being reactionary with it. You know, if you're making progress, you're staying healthy, and you're enjoying the gym, it's like you don't need to add anything, you know, and especially as an advanced athlete, because progress at this point is slower, obviously. And so any progress that you see is great. You know, any increase in strength is great. And so I think that curve kind of closes a little bit, and there's a little bit less wiggle room as you progress across your training career. And doing more, there's a greater risk of doing more having a net negative effect as you're more advanced than there is early on, I'd say.
That's been my experience.
It is.
Like, when I've tried to run like more set volume, like actually trying to increase sets throughout a mess up.
Yeah.
Like, the only thing I get is a bunch of aches and pains.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, there's
stress. Yeah, it's stress, because now I'm in the gym longer than I should be. And
that's the other thing too, Jeff, is you look at your set, two of your sets probably equal five of somebody else because of the effort that you put in there and the proximity to failure and the quality of your repetitions. And that's why I, especially over the last few years, I've wanted to see people's training kind of more and more and more and more as a coach, because just for the reason that you talk about, if I saw two of your sets, I would say, okay, you know what? If we increase a set, let's do one set maybe every third week, you know? Whereas if there was somebody else that they were a little bit, maybe they were cutting depth on their range of motion, you know, or they weren't quite as clean, or they were cutting it a further away from failure, you know, I probably there might do one of two things. I'll say, okay, let's either A, go ahead and add volume, but don't change any of your technique, as long as it's kind of, keep in mind when I say this, I'm thinking decent technique and form, right? But yeah, let's go ahead and add a set, because I feel like from what I've seen, we don't want to change any other variable, but yeah, we can add a set here or add a set there. Or B, I'll say, okay, let's not add any volume, but more range of motion, slower on the eccentric, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know,
those are skill
because,
components.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Those
are for sure.
Absolutely.
So that's how I look at lifting now, is more from a skill set, like looking at other sports. Like, you guys hear me talk about this all the time. Like, I pay attention to the science and all that, but I look at like other sports more so. Like, what are they doing? Like, I'm not going to have like Manute Bol toss up 23 pointers in a game unless I want him to hit 20%. Steph Curry, yeah, I'm going to let him shoot 30 times because he's going to make maybe half of those.
He's got a higher percentage, yeah.
His quality, his skill is higher. So it's like, higher. Okay, how can I get Manute Bol to shoot like Steph Curry? It's like, let him shoot 10 in a game, maybe 5 in a game, but in practice, he's going to get a lot more attempts there. It's just kind of like weight training. It's like, if I'm doing a curl, let me work on A to B first before I start tossing in a bunch of sets. Because if my skill isn't all that great, now I'm doing like 5 crappy ass sets. So I'm not saying someone would get hurt, but the risk could go up for like elbow issues and things like that. So I'd rather have someone start at 2 or 3 sets. And like you said, Brad, let's just make sure your skill is really good from A to B, like nice and clean. And then we'll worry about load and reps after that. And then, because once you're done with the skill, you got the skill down, it's like, okay, now if we get reps and load, that's going to carry us so far. That's going to be an increase in volume. And then when you plateau out, then the question always is, why are we plateaued in the gym? Why can't we increase load or reps anymore? You got
to
look at it.
Do we even have to? Do we need to let the adaptations catch up to what you're doing?
Yeah, because sometimes you sit in the pocket. It's like, okay, I'm kind of stuck. But then if you just keep at it, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks go by, well, you get adapted to it. And all of a sudden, you're like, oh, I just got another rep.
And that's the tricky part, is when do you know that you've adapted to it? It could take more than 6, 7, 8 weeks. You could continue beginning adaptations from that, and skill development and all that other stuff that we talked about.
Well, that's where the reactionary, like to me, advanced bodybuilding is more... It's more about being reactionary in the moment, not like what your fancy spreadsheet says or how much, how many set volume you have on there because you think you should be doing X amount because you're advanced. It's more like how you can call adjustments. Like Tom Brady comes up to the line, scans the field, like, oh shit, I got 6 defensive backs. Well, I don't think I'm going to hand the ball off right here.
Yeah.
So it's things like that. But yes, for me, it's like skill acquisition first, performance after that. By plateau, then it's like maybe it's more volume if there's, you have enough available energy to do it. Like if you're fatigued out, it's like, it's not a good idea to add a bunch of volume in there.
Yeah.
So volume over time, it's not linear. It's not like Jeff in year 1 was doing 2 sets and then in year 38, I'm doing 5 sets across the board and everything. It's kind of just gone up and down, up and down, up and down.
I think, if anything, a case, strong case could be made, you might benefit from more sets early on, and then they come down over time because your proficiency increases.
Yeah, exactly. Because you need more. Manute Bol needs 30 shots in order to hit Steph Curry's 10. He shoots 20, he gets 10. So
Yeah, and that you know what that reminds me of so much is in healthcare, that minimum effective dose of medication that they do. It doesn't even matter. Well, first of all, you don't know the person that you're talking to anyway. They could be a drug addict, and yeah, maybe they can handle a little bit more, you know, morphine or a little bit more propofol or whatever. It doesn't matter. You don't know what you're doing. They start with the minimum effective dose to see if they get a response. And then, like you said, Brian, they kind of go up from there.
But I agree. If someone's like just starting out, they're going to need more sets in order to
develop the skill, maybe.
To get
the skill set.
Yeah, but then if it's like, if you got to be really careful though, like make sure they're actually moving things A to B correctly, because if they're doing five sets and you're not keeping a good eye on that,
it's
that can be,
yeah,
so it's kind of a double-edged sword.
It is, because it increases chances of injury if they're
exactly
sloppy.
And then on top of it, you've got people that, I mean, you guys have probably seen this. I've talked about this before. You've got some people, the first time they pick up a barbell and bench press with it or squat with it, it's perfect. They're rare, but they're out there, you know? And then you've got the people on the other side, the first time they pick up a barbell, it takes them forever to get even decent execution. And then you've got everywhere in between, you know?
But is there a rule that says, like, we can't have a, like, two or three blocks of training where it's just skill acquisition with two sets? Like, why can't we just start there? Why does it have to be this newie needs five sets?
Progressive.
Yeah. I'm not saying the same effectiveness. It's like, this person has 20, 30, 40 years of training still. So, like you said, right, you could kind of look at it and go, okay, this guy, he moves pretty well. Okay, he can probably get away with a little more volume because it's a little more safer for that person. Because everybody's different.
Yeah, I think there's an argument to be made on both sides there, where, like, what you just said with Brad, if they move really well, I think that one point of view there could be like, okay, they can handle a little bit more volume. Another point of view could be they can get more out of less, like, because they're hitting more, because their sets are more accurate, whatever term you want to use for it. You know, they're able to benefit from less sets.
And that goes back to our original question, really, if you think about it.
It does. So it does. I think one aspect that's either unknown or not talked about enough with a lot of people across a training career is when we add volume, like everything we do, there's diminishing returns with volume, and it's pretty significant. You know, even within a session, you know, the exercise you do first in a session is first set of the first exercise. You know, that's probably going to be your most stimulative set for the whole session, because once you have fatigue elements, you know, both at the nervous system level and, you know, locally at the muscular level, it's going to start to compromise like motor unit recruitment. And so then you're going to start to limit your ability to apply a stimulus even as you start adding sets. And so that's one of the hypotheses as to why there is this observed diminishing returns with added volume. So one of the, you know, common pieces of rationale for not adding sets is like, okay, I don't want to compromise longevity. And so if you have to weigh this on an individual basis, because if you do additional sets, understand that it's not like if you go from four to five sets, you're going to get 25% more gains. You know, it's going to be much less than that. But the other thing too is, okay, if you are willing to, you know, if you understand, okay, it's going to take more time for, you know, 5, 10% more gains, whatever the number is it going to come at the expense of longevity? And if it does, like if you're doing this added volume, but you're getting banged up doing it, well, guess what? Now, when you go into a session and you're in pain, like that limits central drive to the muscle. So it's like pain in and of itself can limit your ability to apply an effective stimulus. So that when I combine those two for an advanced athlete, those two concepts of diminishing returns and we want to make sure we keep the athlete healthy.
Yeah.
In many cases, I'm not increasing volume, even when I think there might be a marginal benefit if things went perfect.
It's not worth the reward.
It really isn't.
Yeah.
And it can set them back, you know, if they get banged up and now you're pulling back volume, waiting for them to heal up, and then you're kind of at ground zero.
It's like
where
you're going
you started.
Ham for the short term. You're like, you might get, okay, yeah, we see a bigger increase now, but it's impacting the back end.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I think that also extends into the conversation of like exercise selection too, because some movements are more conducive to adding sets than others, you know, like adding a set of deadlifts or back squats, you know, that's probably going to be more demanding than adding a set of leg extensions, you know, in terms of, especially just the psychological and time element of it.
Good conversation, you guys.
Yeah.
Shoot, I'm just learning, just listening to you guys. All the little coaching gears are like, you know what? Oh, I need to kind of start thinking about doing this. And oh, this client,
that's,
you know,
what I was
going to
say.
That
there's just so much context and nuance to all this. So how do we put some action in place for someone who's just like, I'm just listening to this for the first time. They're telling me I need to increase my volume over my training career. And these other guys are telling me I just need to focus on my quality. Like, what the hell am I supposed to do?
So I would say the stimulus is going to increase over time. The total magnitude of tension on the fiber level is going to inch up over time. That doesn't necessarily mean it's correlated with additional performance metrics on paper, because quality is a subjective measure, you know? So, but for somebody who's a beginner or an intermediate, like, yeah, your lifts should probably be going up every block or two. The heavier the lift that you're doing, the more likely that you're going to see load progression in a shorter time frame, like a lateral raise. Like, the reason, it's not that our delts adapt slowly or anything like that. It's just the nature of the loading of that movement. You know, going from 15 to 20 pounds, that's a 33% increase.
Yeah.
And like, you would never do that on a back squat, you know? Yeah. So,
and here's something to think about too. I know I'm kind of sidetracking, but if you're in a life or death situation and you had to move move something like doing a lateral, chances are you would probably move your body in a position where you can actually maybe press or pull. Like, you want your limb closer to your torso. Like, if it was me, I'd be like, I'm getting my arm in here where I could actually leverage and move it better than my arm way out there.
Just abducting.
Just pull it up and then punch it out.
Yeah, so really, realistically, it's not a position that's too favorable.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, I mean, I think that's one thing. Finding lifts that are mechanically inefficient like that is, like, it used to be, I've joked about this before with some people. Like, early on in my training career, I would see a leg press and think like, oh, wow, like, I can do 8 plates a side on this. Like, this is awesome. So I would do that because it felt, you know, I felt strong just loading that much weight on. Now, it's like, I don't want to load 8 plates on. You know, I would rather, if I could load a 10 on each side and just have the machine be so inefficient that it still gave me the same torque requirements, like, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think part of that is just understanding, you know, that it's more stimulus related than it is load related. And they're correlated, but they're not cause and effect. But, yeah, I think performance over time should be going up, all else equal. So the same, if you are doing the same execution over time, those numbers should trend up. If you're changing execution, you might not see the numbers trend up if you're increasing quality. And then as far as increasing volume, I think it really just depends on the situation. I still tend to be, I'm probably more conservative than some others in this regard, where I won't increase volume unless I'm very confident that, like, okay, we started off pretty conservative.
Pretty sound.
Yeah. But if I feel like, okay, we're kind of in that somewhere in the mid-teens range for sets, like, it's less enticing for me to go up from there. Not that I never do, I will, but it's not going to be my first move in most cases. But I think, I mean, there's plenty, I guess the last thing I'll say is that the range between, like, what you can maximally benefit from in the minimum you can benefit from, it's probably a lot wider than you realize. And so if you're a novice and you're redlining volume, and let's say you are proficient, like, you still might be able to recover, but the other thing to consider is as you start training, you're able to tap into those higher threshold muscle fibers. And now all of a sudden you're getting more out of less. So
that's a good point.
Yeah. So I think that's the other aspect. But, you know, I wouldn't default to adding volume or trying to progress numbers in lieu of quality.
Quality. So it's basically skill acquisition's priority.
It is.
And then from there, it's like, okay, now we're going to focus on performance, loads and reps.
It is.
And then from there, it's...
I think from there, if once you're focused
keeping,
on loads...
Keeping volume static, like not adjusting set volume, keeping your set volume static, focus on performance.
And if your performance is going up, you're doing enough. Like that,
right.
you don't need to add more. Will you benefit from more? Maybe, but you might be putting yourself, kind of pushing yourself to the right side of that curve. Depending on where you're at.
A lot faster, for sure.
For sure. So I think with, you assess, and then if you plateau, what I like to do is like, okay, how do you feel physically right now? Do we need a deload? Is that why we're plateaued? You know, like assess
fatigue.
The recovery. Yeah, address, like, is this fatigue related or is this stimulus related?
Is fatigue,
related?
Aches or pains, like, not a good idea to add set volume.
Mm-hmm. And a good way to kind of troubleshoot if it's a fatigue issue is just add a day or two of rest before you hit that muscle group again and see if it's any different. I think that's a pretty easy way to kind of troubleshoot and collect data on why the plateau is occurring. Because if you all of a sudden it's like, oh wow, I hit two more reps, you don't need more stimulus. You just need to manage the training stress more carefully throughout the training week.
Uh-huh.
But if you wait 2 days, still the same or worse, then I go like, okay, are you in a place physically where you can handle more volume? Are you in a place logistically where you can handle more volume? And if they are, then I might dial it up a little bit.
If you dial it up, like how much of an increase are we talking?
I usually go up the least amount I can, like one set.
Two sets max.
Yeah. And it's not even that. I mean, a one set increase, that's a, you know, if you're doing three sets, it's a good 25. Bit of increase.
Yeah, and if you're doing that across all exercises, like if you're doing an upper body size, six or seven exercises, it's a big increase in volume.
Yep. And time,
a
too.
A lot of times what I like to do, because like you said, Brian, just because you're having a decrease in performance now, it's not necessarily a sign that things are going awry. And there's... Like we talked about, what truly matters is we get that training in. And sometimes what I'll do is I'll say, okay, you know what? It's kind of like my measurements. I don't like just getting a measurement of a body part and then just saying I got 18-inch arms. You know, I like to get a measurement in the morning. You know, I like to get another measurement a couple of days later in the evening. I like to get a measurement, you know, a couple of days. And then I take the average of all that. And then that's kind of a good sign of what, you know, the true size of your arm is. I'll kind of do that with training too. Okay, yeah, we were down a little bit here. Okay, we only got 10 reps on that lateral raise instead of 12. Or I'm just throwing out an example there, but I'll kind of like to look at whatever that we are wanting to analyze, and I'll kind of average out performance over the course of 3 weeks, and I'll kind of say, okay, well, you know what? We've got this little snapshot in time now, and this is higher than what we did last time, you know, even if it's just a little bit. We don't need to do anything. We just need to continue to get the stimulus in there, let the adaptations continue to happen that we don't think is happening, but clearly now we've kind of got a little glimpse quantifiably that they are, and then run it again down the road, you know, and kind of average things out there. It takes time, and
How much time did you guys say to assess that? Like, okay, we're
two
we
blocks.
Think we're plateaued.
Two blocks.
Two blocks.
At least two,
months,
two blocks.
Two
at
months.
Least two blocks, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So one tool that I've thought about using more, and I haven't implemented, I've done it some with my own training, but I haven't implemented it much with my own athletes yet, is, Brad, you've seen like the estimated one rep max charts and everything. So obviously we don't care about 1RM as bodybuilders, but you know, if you, and the equation doesn't even need to be perfect or 100% mm-hmm. accurate.
You need something.
You just need something that, so if
that
you
use
you,
the same all the time.
If you were to create a spreadsheet that gave, you know, you listed your estimated max for your first set of a movement. So you did 12 reps at a 9 and it spit out a number. And then week 2, you did the same thing, it spit out a number. And then by the end of the block, you average those numbers and then you compare them to those numbers averaged the next block. And so the reason I like that is you can still change rep ranges block to block without it like drastically skewing the results. But that's a good way to sort of see like globally, like am I moving the needle here?
Am I truly plateaued?
Yeah.
You know, and am I worrying about something that is not actually happening?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a lot more conservative in my adjustments than I used to be. I'm a lot more conservative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll just kind of know and try to reassure the person, look, you're getting benefit from this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's really get our ducks in a row before we start saying, okay, let's start adding sets, you know, and et cetera.
For sure. Well, do you feel like we covered everything?
Covered a lot.
I know. I feel like I benefited from it.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, that was a great discussion.
Yeah,
great discussion. Thank you, Brian.
And training volumes always, it's the hot topic. It has been for 15 years, it seems like. And when you hear that, you know, training volume is correlated with hypertrophy, it's easy to prioritize that over everything else is like this cause and effect. But there's like a meta-analysis isn't going to give you all the context you need for your situation. So it's important to kind of with experience gain that self-awareness as well to what you require. So, but that's all I have, unless you guys have anything else.
No, I think this might have like toned down the number of people that say my volume is too low.
How long have we heard that?
Yeah, I mean, it's much more common for me to get a new athlete and end up decreasing their volume than it is increasing it. And sometimes I'm not decreasing. It's like, okay, you seem like you're in a good spot. But rarely is it like, wow, that's all you're doing. Just because most people are doing enough or more than enough. So
I'll just say on my famous line, you won't shrink.
You won't shrink.
You're not going to shrink.
And even if you do take time off like that, Jeff, you got it back in a hurry, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So,
four-month layoff, well, like within a month, everything was back, and I was actually hitting some pretty bass numbers after that.
So
if anything, that probably been a nice little break mm-hmm. that my body might have needed.
And they you see that in the research, too. You know, after detraining periods, the rate of adaptations coming off detraining is faster than the groups that train all the way through. So you end up kind of catching up even with the layoff in between in many cases.
Yeah.
So that was a helpful lesson for me personally, especially like when I go on vacations, I'm not dead set on training, to be honest. Like if I can get in once or twice, great. But and I enjoy it, but just with family and everything, sometimes it's just hard to get done. But it's easy to not stress it now, kind of going through that process a couple times.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're out of the gym for 4 months, you actually see what real atrophy looks like. You're like, oh, I missed a workout. Okay. Or I miss a week.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'll be all right.
Yeah.
So if anything, sometimes like you're off for a week, you don't want to be because mentally you don't want to be totally in there thinking you're going to make more progress. But sometimes your body just needs a break. Clean up some of that aches and pains and all that. And then you have another 6 months of volume ahead of you.
Yep.
Yeah, but we covered it.
Yep.
I'm good.
All right. Well, thanks.
And if the Godfather's good, then I'm good. So.
All right. Well, thank you guys. That was a good chat. And thank you for listening. And we'll catch you next time.